Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this spotlight, I am joined by author Melissa Marr. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Melissa Marr is a former university literature instructor who writes fiction for adults, teens, and children. Her books have been translated into 28 languages and been bestsellers internationally as well as domestically. Accolades include YALSA, Popular Paperbacks, IRA Notable Book Pick, Book Sense Pick, Good Morning America, Summer Pick for Teens. That's really exciting. Scottish Book Trust, Red Maple Finalist, and Goodreads Good Choice Award for Horror. RWA Rito Award. She's best known for the Wickedly Lovely series for teens, The Graveminder for adults, and her debut picture book, Bunny Rue, I Love You. She currently lives with her family in Arizona. Well, welcome. And before we talk about Tony and Addie Go Viral, which is your upcoming release, let's get to know you a little bit.
Sure.
So, as a literature instructor, which I'm having trouble with those two words together, I assume you have been an avid writer and reader your entire life.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I grew up in rural Appalachia,
Okay.
so it was a TV-free household. I think they finally got cable when I was like 15 or 16. So I was either in a field or the woods and generally had one or two books in a pocket with me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm all about the reading.
So what made you write your first book?
Honestly, my 12-year-old daughter.
Okay.
I became her mom when she was just about to turn 5, and I had a newborn and a 5-year-old, and I was looking at making What You Make Teaching English, which, just for the record, isn't a whole lot.
No, it's not.
And I decided to write a book so I could pay for college for the kids. And I was like, okay, so I did the research, and books, you know, they don't pay a whole lot. But I figured, you know, I could save up. I had X number of years. There's math I'm not doing. And then that was it. You know, I wanted to support my family. So I actually, you know, I wrote a book. It was terrible. No one bought it. And then I wrote another book, and it just sort of exploded. Wicked Lovely came out 20 years ago. And, you know, it debuted on the bestseller list. It was just re-released like 2 months ago now. So, you know, I was able to pay for my kids to go to college.
Which it's so expensive, and it keeps getting more expensive.
Is. I mean, even with, so like my daughter had scholarship, and you know, my son chose to live at home so he could do, like, you know, not pay the lodging, but it still adds up so quickly.
It does. So you have a wide variety of like worlds in which you write in. What do you have a different writing process for each subgenre that you're in, or is it all similar?
No, I mean, it's really, in a lot of cases, I start books for myself.
Okay.
Like Tony and Addie, I started because my youngest, I adopted again in 2012, and he was doing parkour and gymnastics, and I'm a helicopter mom, so I was
Okay.
sitting there watching him, and I just started writing Tony and Addie, and I wrote it over a series of like 3 years, just sitting there watching him. And so it was more of a, like, this is something for me to do because I'm sitting here. My first book I wrote in the pickup line for my first two kids when, you know, I was half homeschooling and then they did charter school other days. So I was either like in a parking lot, a park, gymnastics class again. Like, so I think the only thing is really just like, I don't do well sitting still.
Okay.
So I write when I sit still, and sometimes it's a picture book and sometimes it's a novel. And I mean, the only really weird one is I have a book of my photography, which
Okay.
happened completely by accident. And that was like, I was out hiking and kayaking with wild horses and took
Okay, that sounds
photos.
awesome.
It was. And then my editor's like, can I buy these? And I thought it was for reference for like someone's art. I didn't realize she meant like as a
Oh, and
book.
she put the book together.
Yeah. And she's like, okay, now you need to write words for this. And I'm like, For what? So yeah, like I don't have a process. I like to write.
When you, so no process at all. You don't plan out your stories or anything like that. You just write the words and hope they make sense.
I think in some way I must be doing that, like in a part of my
Subconsciously.
brain. I mean, I taught literature. I mean, I did undergraduate and graduate with lit. I taught lit for 10 years. And so I think that sense of like teaching people how books work. And these days I teach a couple classes a year in an MFA. So I'm constantly talking about like, how does it work? What is the act? What is the tipping point? Like all of these things. And I think my brain just reorders it. But in fairness, I also don't write linearly. Like I write scenes that make sense to me and then I move them around into a book. So I don't know. My brain is really ADD.
I like to read books like that sometimes.
Yeah, me too. Drives my family crazy, but like I love to read the ending first. Like, should I get invested in this book?
Well, so for me, like I will always start at the beginning, always. And sometimes I'll get like three or four chapters and it's not like pulling me in. And so I'll skip about three fourths of the way through till, and then read like two or three chapters and be like, okay, I'm liking how they like what's happening now. Let me go back about halfway to see like what I've missed. And then I'll skip to the very end to get that part. And then I'll like go back and read what I haven't read.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me.
Well, thank you, because everybody looks at me like I'm a psychotic person. And I'm
Right?
like, it's
No, I
just
get
like
that.
I need to know what happens, but like,
Yeah.
it's not pulling me in the way I want it to. So I will read books completely. Like I'll read the entire book, start to finish, just not start to finish in the way that you're supposed to.
I mean, I think supposed to is such a relative concept. I mean, we're being bombarded with data all the time, right? I've got my now 12-year-old schedule, my daughter who's 32 now, she's an archaeologist. She came home for a month. And then I've got my wife's schedule and I've got all those things. And I'm not always in the like, I want to read the beginning or I want to read the ending. I want to drop into a world for a couple chapters and then drop in later at a different place. And eventually I finish most of the books, but I think your way makes perfect sense. It's how I read, it's how I write.
Well, I appreciate that because it validates my chaos. Well, and I feel the same way. Like our kids are going back to school actually next week. And so like swim signups have started and schedules are coming out and baseball schedules and gymnastics schedules. And thankfully
Yes.
my husband's schedule is set and he doesn't do a lot outside of work and like helping me shuttle the kids. But it's just like there's just so much happening like right now.
Yeah. And I mean, I think between that and keeping track of like right now, I had a, Tony and Addie just came out. I've got page proofs on another book that comes out in January. That's now. I've got revisions on a third book that comes out in June. So I'm like all these worlds in my head simultaneously. And you can't do that as well if you can only do things in a linear way. I think my ADD is a superpower. That's my argument, and I'm sticking to it.
I've never really done linear well. Like, I was always so. I was always the kid who, when I was in kindergarten, we had like O's, S's, and U's for our grades. I would always get an S in coloring because I could not color in the lines. And my mom was always like, yeah, that's never going to happen. So I'm just giving up now.
I mean, creativity is cool.
Yeah, it is. And it, well, it's how you like, and I was fortunate, like my parents like really were like, if you don't want to color in the lines, that's fine. Like you do your thing. So we had
No,
that
I mean, and
support.
I completely believe that, and I think it results in, in my experience so far, really interesting humans as the children I've raised. My daughter is an archaeologist. My eldest son is a conservation biologist. They didn't pick predictable jobs. I mean, she's living in a tent at the tip of Africa, and he's somewhere in the state of Arizona right now researching something. It's cool. Like they're not boring. And I'm really proud of that.
Well, that's exciting. Those are actually two like really interesting fields because you don't, and it's one of those things where like they exist everywhere, but I only know one other like archaeologist, and it was some guy my brother went to high school with. And like when he said, I'm gonna go to like become an archaeologist, we're like, really? That's the what you're doing? That's cool, but what made you do that?
No, I mean, it was fascinating to me how many of my daughter's colleagues in the program were like, my parents want me to get a practical degree. And I'm like, you know, I write books for a living. I've been doing this for 20 years,
Yeah.
supporting multiple households off my art. So I'm not going to tell you that a career that fills you with passion is a bad idea. Because my job is completely impractical, but it's what I do.
And you get joy out of it too.
I do.
So your characters, they are complex. Is it hard to balance the complexity of the character while keeping the storyline make sense?
Think I'm very much a character first kind of person. And I think that human complexity is what creates tension and what creates, pacing and conflict and all of that. So, to me, if my characters weren't complex, weren't people that are deeply flawed, there's no story, you know? And so, I think that's been kind of consistent throughout my writing is that I start with a character. And then I look at their weaknesses and strengths, and the plot comes out of kind of forcing them to confront those weaknesses. So no, I guess.
So let's talk Tony and Addie Go Viral. It came out August 12th, 2025. So it's a brand new release. There's some fake relationship mixed in there. It is a sapphic romance. There's Hollywood aspect. Tony is a brand new novelist, but it's really a story of a lot of self-discovery and self-love, and the journey for Tony more so to get there than Addie. But the whole premise of Tony's book is based in the Victorian era. Why the Victorian era?
You know, when I first started writing this, it was going to be time travel.
Oh,
Because
I would read that.
I love time travel books. My period of research for literature is the Victorians. I
Okay.
am obsessed with the Victorians. And so I just started thinking, like, write what you know. And as I mentioned earlier, like, my first book came out and literally changed my life. I had to get a passport, I had to get on airplanes, like, it was a whole thing. And I went from, making 30K a year as a writer to getting this $500,000 deal. And it was completely life-changing. And I was not prepared. And I was a mess. I was an absolute mess over it. And so Write What I Know is someone who has commitment fears, juggling teaching. I had a tenure track position at the time when I got the book deal. So I went from tenure track, I'm going to teach literature, specifically Victorian literature, to suddenly my world is turned upside down and I've got to juggle these two careers. So I think I was basically taking some complicated things from my past and giving them to someone and making it worse. That was sort of my goal. So very much about the self-discovery. And also, recently my wife and I had to deal with my grandmother-in-law. Her grandmother had dementia. And what does that mean? And how does that work for you? And thinking about that and thinking about my daughter, my eldest child, whose bio mother died of cancer. And so she was heavily sedated, opiates, et cetera, and they had no chance to have that closure. So I think I was taking a lot of like, how can I like dive into these emotions? And that was very much what it was about for me. It was about people that are, we're being tasked with figuring out some complicated things. And at the same time, that's usually when romance happens, when your life is a wreck. And you simply don't have the bandwidth. So how do you deal with this really beautiful thing happening simultaneous with these like pressures. Not that like succeeding as an author is bad, but it's terrifying. Like, what if I can't do it again, et cetera, et cetera. And also family drama. So I wanted to write characters who were trying to deal with what that all means. And at the same time, I wanted Addie to have her sense of discovery. Like, she's just figuring out that she's Demi. She's figuring out that she's a lesbian, but she is utterly inexperienced. And so again, having two people who are both trying to figure that out, I think those are interesting people.
Well, and I think one of the things I really enjoy about their story is there are a lot of parallels to them. Like Addie's mom and dad are both still alive. They're both healthy, but they've had, I wouldn't say, I mean, toxic in a sense, but they've had these like up and down relationships. Like they've been married, they've been divorced, they've married other people, but they always come back together. And then on Tony's side, like her mom is sick. She's in a home. Like she is going through like a big mental crisis, and her dad has passed away, but like they had a somewhat toxic relationship too, in the sense where like they both were kind of hot messes. And like, so she feels like she isn't worthy of love and shouldn't be loving people because what's going to happen if she turns out that way? But Addie, she's like, I want to be loved. I want that like solid love that like never leaves me. So it's like they both have these chaotic upbringings, but they are very different in the way they deal with them at the same time.
No, I mean, and I think I've known so many women who have a difficulty with relationships because they haven't had a successful model of love. And I'm one of those women, you know. I haven't seen healthy relationships in my upbringing, in my, in my 20s, and when you don't have that template, and I mean healthy, not as in like they're still married, that's where Addie's parents come in, but I mean healthy as in like supportive and you both make the other person better and like that kind of healthy. And so it's really hard to believe that that kind of true love is possible when you haven't seen it modeled. And I think, I've seen some early readers say that, Tony and Addie should have done this differently and done that. Well, of course they should have if they were healthy people, but they're both people that ultimately need a little therapy.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't really?
Right? I mean, and I argue that. I argue that within the book, and I argue that in life, that like sometimes you need to deal with your own baggage before you can find that happily ever after.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and Addie, like, she gets to a point where she's like, I am worth this. I need this. And if you can't give it to me, then I am taking myself out of the equation. So, like, they definitely, like, they experience that third act breakup, which I love a third act breakup. Like, they have that. Like, Addie is very, like, sure that, like, Tony has to be the one to make the change. Like, Addie's like, I know my worth. Like, this is what, like, you have shown me, like, what I need and what I'm capable of. But, and I try to do the same for you, but I can't do it if you're not willing.
Well, and I think for me, if I have a third act breakup, I want it to be for a real reason. And, there have been relationships in my past where I very much loved the person I was with. I was with a woman who was fabulous, but she wanted to enlist in the army, and she couldn't have that and me. And, for her, it was, this is what I need. I need this career. I need this future. And you have to be willing to stay in the closet for that to happen. And that wasn't an option for me. So I think having that sense of know your worth, it doesn't mean sometimes when people break up that they don't love each other. It just means they're not in the right space for what each of them need. And I still think that's an important kind of love. Like, I don't regret that. And I think seeing that in fiction feels more honest to me than artificial breakups. Like, oh, they could have talked and everything would be fine. Yeah, I mean, that would be nice. But sometimes people's own issues get in their path.
Oh,
That's
definitely.
kind of why the way I wanted that third act breakup to be is like, love is not the problem. Sometimes love is just not enough.
Well, and with Toni, like she has a lot of, like she has her best friend who she's had for years and years and years. And so she has that like love in the sense where like she has the family, she has it. But I don't like, as you read her, like she doesn't recognize that for what it is either. And like her best friend Emily, who I really enjoyed,
I
but she
love
gives
them.
her some really hard truths. And it's like, you have to be willing to do these things. She's like, I have seen you self-destruct basically like for years, and it doesn't matter what I say, like you haven't been willing to hear it. And so it's like, that's a big part of it too. It's like, you have to listen to the people who know you best.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I think about the book, yes, at its heart, it's a romance, but it's also a book about other kinds of love. It's about Toni's love and her coming to terms with her mom. It's coming to terms with being willing to accept love. It's coming to terms with the fact that she feels really vulnerable about her writing career. It's Addie coming to terms with the fact that her parents are always going to be difficult, but that doesn't mean that she can't have that healthy love with them. It's accepting her desire for her career and how that, works with also a sense of like self-confidence and self-respect. And I think that's the book I was writing more than anything else about you have to love yourself. You have to let people love you in order to get that happily ever after. I think it's all part of the same journey.
Well, and so like the fake relationship aspect of it. So the premise is they meet in Scotland because Addie is living there. Tony's there for a conference. Addie has actually like been watching Tony's lectures and like strives to meet her. And so she goes and meets her. They like have a moment at a bar and things progress, but then things stall because Addie freaks out a little. But then they create this relationship through email, which I have to say, I love the email side of it.
I
I
do
love
too.
the fact that you went that route.
Well, I think we live in an age where, like, I have writing friends, writers that I talk to online, and I've never met in person. But, like, we exchanged an email over my book or her book. And, like, there's a couple people I've been talking to for like 15 years, and we've never been in the same physical space. And I think that's part of the modern landscape, you
It
know?
really is,
And it's also a kind of reality of like, then you do meet, right? And when you meet, is the conversation the way you have it online transfer? Like, I have a couple pet words I say, as you can see, those of you that can't see the video, I wave my hands like I was just swatting a bee all the time. But in text, I sound much calmer. And so, if you see me in person, if we've been talking online for a year, like it's a different kind of reality. And I feel like we all do that. We curate our personas, either intentionally or subconsciously through our social media, through email exchanges. And then when we meet in person, like there's a difference. And I wanted to play with what that meant on the dating sphere. I mean, I think it's an interesting reality of dating in this time period.
Well, it almost takes you back to like when people were, they wrote letters, which nobody writes letters anymore. And it's very sad. But I mean, at the price of a stamp is ridiculous. But anyway, so it takes you back to that time where people communicated through letter. Like telephones were like people had them, but they like you couldn't call long distance. Or if you did, it was an arm and a leg because we had to pay for that at one point. And it's just, it takes you to like a different era almost, even though it is through email. So it gives that like old school style. It made me, because it made me think of it, because I was talking to in my day job, my secretary said that she was watching like old Doris Day Rock Hudson movies with her grandchildren, and we were talking about pillow talk and how they had the party lines and how like Rock Hudson was always like bugging up the party line with all his girlfriends and things like that. And like it was such a different time.
I mean, my grandmother had a party line,
Oh yeah.
so I remember being a kid and listening to it. And honestly, my uncle and I exchanged letters. He was better at it than I was. He sent me a letter every week the whole way through college and graduate school.
That's awesome.
And then in the later years of his life, we switched to this ongoing text conversation that was entirely exchanging quotes from pieces of literature. Like, it was a weird way to communicate. It was a weird shorthand we had. And I felt like Tony, as a Victorians professor, would appreciate that sort of letter approach to communication, in a way that it just felt like a natural communication. And I don't feel like Insta-love versus what they're doing is a complicated thing in a sapphic relationship, because there is the sense that they share their moment the night they meet, but then there's like a year of getting to know each other before they see each other again. And I feel like it's not Insta. I mean, there was Insta lust,
Yeah,
but
definitely.
that's
They
it.
had that connection, but then they had to cultivate that relationship and connection.
And I feel like that's realistic. I think having that spark, that physical attraction, was very realistic. And I feel like for Addie, she had the added advantage of knowing who Tony was in advance, like having watched her lectures. And I just keep thinking about like parasocial relationships. Like, I'll have readers that have been reading my books for a couple decades come up and they'll ask about, my baby, Chaos. He's 12 now, but I've been talking about him since he lived in the hospital for 41 days. And I would post about like my journey of dealing with what he was going through. His birth mother was a heroin addict, and it was a rough couple years. But these people have never met him, but they ask about him, and they have that sense of like knowing him through my words and the journey part that I've shared. And I felt like Addie would have that with Tony. So she's kind of a step ahead.
Well, and she's, well, we like to call it gentle stalking because
Yes.
like we're in a world where it's like everything's so exposed anymore, and a lot of people, like authors, they're just so, you're so much more involved. Because like on the podcast we talk about how like when we were growing up, you had like, if you wanted to talk to an author, you had to mail a letter to the publishing company because nobody was indie published back in the 80s and 90s. So it's like you mailed your letter to the publisher and maybe you would make a connection with them. But maybe not, because you basically went into the slush pile, and it's like if your letter got lucky enough to be read, then that was very exciting. But it's like there's just so much more open communication with the way the world is. And that's the thing, like we do share a lot. And so it's like people you've never met, like they know a lot about your life. And so it's a weird world, but it's fun at the same times. Well, sometimes.
I mean, I love it, but I have to say, dating with the sense that people could Google me and read about me, read my interviews, watch videos of me, listen to podcasts, was really unsettling. Like, it's that like, hi, lovely to meet you. Are you aware that I exist before this moment? Because if you are, like, we don't need to go on this date. And it's a weird sense of how things have shifted, which I'm fascinated by, both this book and Greta Gets the Girl, which comes out in January, is dealing with how do you date when you have a recognizable name to some degree. And Toni's obliviousness, I was honestly, that was one of my biggest fears with the book. Are people going to think she's stupid that she actually doesn't think that Addie would have noticed her book or Googled her at some point in their conversation?
Well, but she didn't know her last name. I'm doing air quotes, people. You can't see me.
And no, I mean, it
But
was finding that reason that she would think that she could have that anonymity,
Which I thought it was interesting. And that's like a big part of who Toni is, like throughout the relationship. Like she holds so much back. And like Addie even says, like, you never told me your name. Like we talked for a year and you still never told me. Like that was a choice. Like you made choices in keeping things separate. I just really love their story.
Thank you.
And I was telling Melissa when we first started, but I listened to the audiobook and I love the narrators. I love the way that they brought the story to life because it's like narrators can be hit or miss, and I like to speed my books up because if I listen to it at one, I lose focus. Like I can't even. It puts me to sleep. Like so I always speed up, but even like sped up, like the cadence of the two narrators, they matched really well, and like I feel like they matched the characters exceptionally well as well. And I said well like 17 times there.
Now, I absolutely loved them and loved the job they did. And I think for me, one of the moments that was so fascinating is they, as well as the voice actors for My Remedial Magic, managed to make me blush and be on the edge of my seat listening to a book that obviously I know what's happening. I wrote it,
But it's very
but
different to hear your words out
it
loud.
is, but I got to a couple of those conflict scenes, and oh my gosh, how are they going to get? And I'm like, they're going to get through part of this. You know what happens next, Melissa. You wrote this thing. But they did such a compelling job, such a compelling job that I was smitten.
Well, it makes you fall in love with your books and your characters all over again.
Which is a really weird feeling.
I'm sure. I can't say that I have experienced that because I don't write, but I do listen and read a lot. So, but yeah, it's just, but I like, so for me, typically, like I will reread books and audio. Like a lot of times, like I need that, like those words in front of me when I'm reading the book the first time around. But this one, like, time-wise, I was like, I need to listen to it. And I didn't mind that at all. Like they were so engaging that they like I could focus on other stuff, but like they created such a world in my ear that I was like, yeah, I will be searching for these narrators
Yeah,
because
no,
I
they're
love them.
phenomenal. Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. And I feel very fortunate that I've been able to have a voice in selecting my voice actors. I listened to a bunch of auditions for this and for both Remedial Magic and Reluctant Witch, which both came out in the last like 15 months. And I'm like, when you hear the right voice for the character, you're like, yes, that one. That one, that's who, and it doesn't always work, but then there are other times like, gosh, I had a book called Graveminder that came out in like, I don't know, 2011, 12. It's been a minute. And I can remember that the voice actor, Emma Galvin, like when I reread my book now, because I did a short story in the world, so I was rereading it, I hear her voice in the characters. And I'm like, okay, that's surreal that the voice was so compelling that it like replaced the voices that I heard when I originally drafted the book. And that was like, it's a weird feeling when it happens, but like, art is art and voice acting is such art.
Well, I did an interview with Nevessa Allen, and we were talking about the audiobook for Caught Up, and she said she was at a signing or some like sort of conference, and she's like, and there was a bunch of audio narrators there, and she said she heard somebody talking, like she's in the middle of a conversation, she heard somebody talking, and she's like, she like walked away and was like, I need to know whose voice this belongs to because this is who I need to do my like character. She's like,
Nice.
I heard the voice and I knew instantly like she was Lauren. And I was like, that's intense. And she's like, yeah, and it worked out. Like she's like, and I was lucky enough to get her for it.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I'm face blind, I feel like voices are extra important to me. Like when I describe my characters, I realize like it's the last draft when I start describing what they physically look like. I have one series, a middle grade series, that I never described the character, and we're in like book two. And the artist for the cover's like, what does the character look like? I'm like, I don't know. What do you think? And she told me what my character looked like, and I wrote it into the book because I don't see the facial part. Right. So when I'm describing people, I describe their voice, I describe their hair, their walk, the way they move and gesture. But I don't have the same ability to recognize. Like if I saw you on the street, like in 5 minutes after we hang up here, I wouldn't recognize you. And so voices are just super critical to me when I'm like defining people. So I'm very picky with voice actors. So when I get it right, great.
That's so interesting. Well, because honestly, I had never heard of that. And then Susan Stoker wrote a book where one of her characters was face blind, and I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Because I've heard of people who like they never forget faces, like they have like eidetic memories, but I'd never heard it on the opposite spectrum.
No, it's a weird thing. Like I recognize people a lot of times. It was funny when I was fencing because my coach is like, "How can you walk up to me when I have like a mask on and all the coaches are dressed the same?" And I said, "Well, because when you move, I know how your body moves. That's how I recognize you." And I'm like, "As long as everyone's moving, I can identify you on the fights field." And so he had everyone freeze, and I'm like, "I don't know who anyone is now because you're not moving. But as long as you're moving, I can find you." Like I recognize when people change their soap, their perfume, because those are things I use to identify people. But the face part, just my brain doesn't file it.
Yeah, I've been seeing like where it'll be like a grandparent, like a set of grandparents, and like all the grandkids are like lined up behind them and saying hi, and they have to figure out which grandkid it is, like just by the voice. I'm like, I don't know how good I would be at that.
I mean, you adapt if it's where your brain is. I had, and it's weird because I had a brain injury in my 20s. And so people I could identify before that, I can still facially recognize. But the ones since then, like, just haven't imprinted in my brain. It's fascinating to try and figure out how it works. Like my kids have tricked me. At one point, one of my older kids had a friend dress just like him and get in the car. And I was like, started to drive, and then his friend said something, and I was like, "You're not my kid. Hold on." And I had to loop back around. And it's just, it's a thing.
That's
It's a
funny.
thing.
It's such a kid thing to do.
Like if the voice is like, I have to hear your voice to know who you are.
So now from anytime anybody gets in the car, they have to say hi
Yeah,
to
I need you to
I
speak
need a
this sentence.
word.
But yeah.
That's funny. So what's next?
So in January, the book I am in proofreading stage on is called Greta Gets the Girl. Greta is about Tony's editor. And another character we meet in Tony and Addie, who have a romance. And that one I actually had to design a dating app for, which was super fun. So I designed a fake dating app for the purposes of the book. So that one is coming out January like 12th, 13th, that week, whatever Tuesday is. And then June 23rd, I have a book coming out that's called A Treason of Magic. And that book is basically Buffy the Vampire Slayer in a Bridgerton era, except instead of hunting vampires, she's hunting fairies, malicious fairies, obviously. So
Obviously.
obviously, not like Tinkerbell, not cute fairies.
Malicious
So
fairies.
yeah, so I'm going back to my folklore roots a little bit with that one. So that one is June. And then there's another book set in that world that I think is November. So like there's three more releases coming fast. I don't know if the third one is actually going to be in 2026 because I haven't written that one yet. But the other two are done in, just
So
in the
you're gonna do
hopper.
three in that fairy killer world.
I mean, maybe. I mean, right now I have a second one. Like I have the characters, I have the voice. I'm ready to dive into that actually in the next couple of weeks. And I have the second contemporary romance. So the contemporary romance is done, the June book is done. So I don't know what comes. I don't know if there'll be a third one in that world or I'll write another contemporary.
Do we think Emily will get a book?
I would love to write Em's book. When I pitched these, Em's book was the second book. And I'd still love to write her book. She's so pivotal in both of the first two books. So like my fantasy is I get to write M's book, and then I also have enough readers that like the series that I can write Charlie's book. Charlie is the publicist that we meet in the second book.
Okay.
So those are the other two I want to write in that world. But we'll see, you know. Hopefully readers will like it and I'll be able to do that.
Well, I would love an Emily book.
I would too. Emily
Honestly,
is.
I will admit that when I saw that Greta was next, I was kind of bummed out. Because I was
No.
like, oh man, not that her book isn't going to be fun, but really, like, I really needed him.
No, I think part of it is, so I pitched all three, and I
Okay.
will confess that I was gonna do like Tony and Addie, and then M and her love interest, and then Greta and Kay, Kaylee, who we meet in the first book. But you know, that was when they purchased it, they purchased one and three. So I'm hoping they'll say, also, by the way, oops, we forgot Emily. We'd love Emily. So,
We
you know,
shall
any of
see,
you
though.
listening, feel free to say, hey, Bramble, we need M's book, because, you know, if people other than me say it, that helps.
Well, I'll make sure to spread the word that Emily needs to happen.
She does.
Well, I want to say thank you so much for coming on and chatting all things authory and Tony and Addie.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Well, this honestly, like, and I tell every author that I do the interviews with, like, this is one of my favorite things about the podcast is getting to chat with authors one-on-one, or sometimes it's me and like one other co-host, but just learning about everybody's journey. Everybody's journey is so different and their writing style is different and the way they came to writing. I love hearing their like origin stories.
Well, and I think it's extra fun for us sometimes, especially those of us that are like hopping around different genres and different, like, I'm writing picture books and doing photography of wild horses. Then, hey, here's a romance. And then here's a fantasy. Like, I feel like sometimes people never know what to expect from me because I'm so ADD with what I write next. So these are really nice. So readers can say, aha, now I know what's coming.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.